Hola, podcast listeners. It's María Hinojosa. So we know you love music, and we know you want more. And NPR's All Songs Considered podcast is here to help. Each week, Bob Boylan and Robin Hilton share the best of the best new and upcoming music. Download artist interviews, live concerts, and lots of songs we're sure you'll fall in love with. Find new All Songs episodes every Tuesday at iTunes.com/NPR. From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm María Hinojosa.
What does every hood need? You know what I mean? Like, every hood needs a store where you can go and get the randomest things. Or like, yo, I just ran out of milk. Oh, I can't, you know what I mean? I can't take the train 10 stops to the actual supermarket. So let me just run downstairs and get, you know what I mean, a half a gallon to hold me down.
For you, that might be a convenience store at a gas station or a 7-Eleven. But here in New York City, that store is a bodega. Today, the bodega, from its role as a quasi-community center to the place where some people buy all their groceries and why that can be dangerous.
So those are all products that typically a doctor is going to say, no, don't do that.
The bad food you love, the daily deliveries, and familia. All this and more coming up on Latino USA as we spend a day in the life of a New York City bodega. I'm María Hinojosa. Stay with us. No se vayan. Welcome to Latino USA. I'm María Hinojosa.
Do you guys mind if I bother you for one quick second? I work for a radio show, and this is kind of a random question.
That's our producer, Marlon Bishop. He recently went out with his microphone here in New York City and quizzed some people on the street.
What would you call the kind of store in New York City where you'd go to buy, for example, a candy bar?
A bodega?
Where you might go to buy a newspaper.
A newspaper?
Like a single bar soap. If that's all you need to get, where would you go? A gallon of milk. Like a little bit of laundry detergent, and it was late at night. A can of soda, for example.
My first thought would probably be just a bodega.
Where I come from, that's the bodega.
The bodega?
A bodega.
This is great, Marlon. Everybody you talked to instantly came up with the word bodega, which is a word in Spanish.
That's because bodega is a word that everybody who lives in New York just has to know, whether they speak Spanish or not. It's as basic to the city as subway or bagel.
Right. So, of course, I live in New York City. I know what you're talking about. But for all of our listeners, Marlon, all across the country, what exactly is a bodega?
Let's ask the fine people of New York that question.
A 24-hour store.
Usually a corner store.
A deli and a convenience store put into the smallest space imaginable.
That's the place in the hood where you go get your groceries.
That's not as corporate as like a 7-Eleven or a Duane Reade or anything like that.
It's like a discotheque because they got the loud Spanish music playing and there's always a cat sitting on the bread. And you're like, Poppy, why the cat always on the bread?
Yo, a bodega has literally like, if you need something, it has what you need. But sometimes that one thing that you need, it never has.
Like a cornerstone or like cornucopia cosmopolis, yeah. Pretty much.
There you have it.
I love this. So basically, in summary, your friendly neighborhood family-run store that more often than not in New York City is owned by Dominicans, although these days there are a lot of them who are owned by immigrants from Yemen as well.
And they're everywhere. Estimates vary, but there's somewhere between 11,000 and 17,000 bodegas in New York City. You might even find three or four of them on a single block.
And the bodega fills the role that a gas station convenience store, or let's say like a 7-Eleven, might fill in other parts of the country.
A bodega is like, you remember back in the day, like when, like in the Wild West films, like the general store? You know what I'm saying? Like a bodega is like a general store.
This is Joel Martinez. He's also known as the Kid Mero. He's a Dominican-American writer and comedian. You might have seen him in MTV's Guy Code.
Very knowledgeable individual from the Bronx.
And since he's so knowledgeable, we asked Mero to give us his definition of a bodega.
What does every hood need? You know what I mean? Like, every hood needs a store where you could go and get the randomest things. Or like, yo, I just ran out of milk. Oh, I can't, you know what I mean? I can't take the train 10 stops to the actual supermarket. So let me just run downstairs and get, you know what I mean, a half a gallon to hold me down. They might have something similar to a bodega like outside of New York City, but to me it's like one of the pure New York City things. Like, I'm going to go see Poppy get a bacon, egg, and cheese, a Lucy, you know what I mean, and a 50-cent soda that will harm my fertility rate.
So you can get sandwiches and sodas at any chain convenience store, but essentially, there are some things that can only happen at a bodega.
Let's say they have a much different feel to them.
It feels less sanitary, in a good way. Like, the atmosphere is totally different. Like, you can't go into, like, a supermarket and just, like, sit there and hang out. But you could do that in a bodega. You could go in there, sit down, talk, hang out. You know what I mean? You could buy something in a bodega and eat it. You know, and it's, like, part of the community, because it's, like, I could go to Pathmark. I don't know nobody's name in Pathmark. But I could go to the bodega and be like, yo, that's Jose. You know, that's Lil Poppy. That's this one. That, you know what I mean? So it's, like, it's a community thing as well.
The word bodega, actually, is an old Spanish word that means the hold of a ship.
You know, it's the place in the boat where they used to keep the flour and the sugar. So it makes sense. Today, it actually means different things in different countries. If you're in Argentina, for example, it's a wine cellar. In Mexico, it's a warehouse. And in the Caribbean, it's often a store.
So today, our show is going to be all about bodegas. And the reason we decided to do this show is that we used to have this really great bodega right next to our office, right down on 125th Street.
It was a wonderful bodega.
And here's our producer, Michael Simon Johnson.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Michael. So this bodega was a major part of our lives. We knew all the people who worked there. We went there every day. We'd get three meals a day there. I got breakfast, lunch, and snack there.
And then one day, the bodega burnt down. And I mean that literally. It caught fire and it burned down. No one was hurt, though.
But we were still devastated. It wasn't just this place where we went and bought sodas and sandwiches. It was kind of like an extension of home.
Right. And so we got this idea. What if we spent an entire day from opening to closing, like a whole, you know, 19 hours, in a single bodega, this place that you normally don't spend more than 10 minutes in?
Or maybe you do.
Right. Maybe you do. It's a place that's so important to our lives, but it's rarely in the spotlight.
Our idea here is that the bodega is much more than a corner store. They're these vital community spaces where our public lives unfold, like thousands and thousands of little town squares located all across the city.
And so, on today's episode, A Day in the Life of a Bodega, our entire team of producers actually took shifts at a bodega in Harlem from morning until night, and we'll be bringing you the stories they found of the people who work and shop there. So I'm handing this show off to my trusty team of Latino USA producers. Take it away, guys.
All right, let's go.
Our producer, Michael Simon Johnson, took the first shift opening.
Do you hear about the guys over in New Jersey? Over Jersey City?
The Red Apple Deli supermarket is neither a deli nor a supermarket. It's a bodega, and it sits at the corner of a big apartment building on 143rd Street and Hamilton Place in Harlem.
They stole a pickup truck in the snowstorm, in the daytime.
In classic bodega fashion, it has a yellow awning advertising beer and sandwiches and a bunch of other stuff.
And backed it in to three different places.
An ice box is out front, and so is Charlie Minning.
And a hot dog place, and stole that cash machine.
It's a quiet, snowy Friday morning. We're not in a super busy part of the neighborhood.
They started like 9 o'clock in the morning. We're done by 10:30.
There's a 24-hour laundromat next door, an Ecuadorian restaurant nearby. And since this is New York, there's a fancy new craft beer place down the block. For all intents and purposes, this is your average bodega on a normal day in a residential part of New York City.
Aha, the kids are here.
A few minutes after I arrive, the owner, Ramon, shows up with his kids.
Morning. How you doing? Morning.
That's Mr. Charlie.
Hey, how you doing? Michael.
First customer?
First customer?
Yes, that's Mr. Charlie.
First customer ever?
Ever. Every single day he comes.
Since bodegas are a central part of New York life, I want to take some time to introduce you to the people who own, operate, and frequent them.
Earliest customers. Man, you guys are up early.
The bodega opens every morning at 6:30 sharp. Charlie is the first person I meet. He's an older white guy with a crazy beard who, for a while, I thought worked at the bodega, but it turns out he's just a loyal customer who sometimes helps out.
How long have you been coming here?
Since I moved here. About, what is it, 9 years?
Yeah. Where were you coming from?
It was a shelter up in northern New York called Camp LaGuardia.
So did you come here once and you were like, okay, this is the place I need to keep coming to?
Yeah. And that was it. Yeah. That was pretty much it.
Charlie says he served in the Navy during Vietnam and was stationed at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba right before the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Are you in touch with any of the people that you served with when you were you were there?
Years ago I was, but probably most of them are dead. I should be dead.
Shack food.
Inside, with its cramped space and misshapen linoleum floor tiles, the Red Apple Deli is like any other bodega. It's not pretty the way a full-blown supermarket is, but it's well-organized and well-stocked.
Ajax, palm olive.
The front sells fresh produce. There's a grill toward the back where you can get sandwiches and coffee. And at the front counter, you can buy non-food things like batteries and phone cards. Within maybe 2 minutes of the place opening, regulars like Charlie are already trickling in.
Everything, I come here every day. Every day, that's where I shop. And they are beautiful people.
I come here almost every day, and they're very nice guys. And they treat their customers with respect.
It's the culture, it's the music.
Yeah.
It's the Latin flavor.
Yeah.
It's the love. You hear the music, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's soothing. It makes you want to salsa, merengue down the house.
Bodega, this is a friendly place.
This is Ramon Murphy, the owner of the Red Apple Deli. He's owned the place for about 20 years.
Soon you come to the bodega, you feel you can your house. No matter if you're white, if you're black, you're Latino, no matter what.
What is it, little cat?
Who's this guy?
Yes, this good little baby.
Adding to that feeling of a house is the bodega cat, which is, for some reason, a well-known aspect of the bodega experience.
You know if it's a boy or a girl?
It's a boy.
Most bodegas in New York have at least one cat hanging around. They're technically illegal, but since they're extremely effective pest control, pretty much no one cares. And the whole morning, I saw this shy orange tabby cat wandering around.
What's the orange cat?
Nile.
Nile?
From One Direction.
Oh, my God.
This is owner Ramon's daughter, Rosalyn. She's 12 and a huge One Direction fan. You know, the insanely popular boy band.
No.
I wanted to name him Zayn.
Zayn. Is Zayn from One Direction?
But I don't think she gets along too well with her younger sister, Catherine.
How come you're not obsessed with One Direction?
Because they're ugly?
No, because she's never heard their music before, and I think that they don't deserve the criticism. They're not inappropriate. They leave a good influence on me and teach me to be myself and not care what people think. Pretty sure they don't care what stories the paparazzi are saying or whatever.
You like listening to One Direction music? That's on you.
Hey, can you, like, block her part out? Because she's, like, criticizing One Direction. The people of America cannot hear that.
I will make sure that One Direction is treated fairly.
So, as we're talking, Ramon's kids, Rosalyn, Catherine, and their brother Ronald, are helping out behind the counter, ringing up the cash register or bagging items. They have seamlessly integrated working at the bodega into their lives. And so has Niall. The cat just does his thing.
Who feeds him? Do you guys feed him?
Yeah, sometimes.
Like with cat food?
Yeah, cat food.
We treat Niall right.
Fortunately, the bodega sells cat food.
All right, I'm confused. Don't you guys have school?
Right over there.
We just walk.
What happened?
Nothing. We're just playing with
Niall.
Ready?
Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah.
Go to school.
You
want some coffee?
Ramon Murphy kicks his kids out of the bodega, pours me a cup of coffee, and I feel very much at home.
I want to try the food here.
Yeah, that's cool.
But I would love some coffee.
Okay. Are you like the coffee?
Coming up on Latino USA, we continue our day at the bodega, including a trip to the mega store where bodega owners buy their products. Stay with us. No se vayan.
Cuando no la llamo, siempre me hace reclamo. Discutimos, peleamos, pero llego a casa en la noche, la molesto y arreglamos. Peleamos. nos arreglamos. Nos mantenemos en esa, pero nos amamos. Ay, pa' mí. Qué pena me daría no tenerte en mi vida, vida mía, mami. Nos arreglamos, nos mantenemos en esa, pero nos amamos. Ahí vamos.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees to choose from, offered 100% online, with 6 start dates a year. Learn more at online.asu.edu. And the Lemelson Foundation, committed to improving lives through invention in the U.S. and developing countries. On the web at lemelson.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today we're spending a whole day in a bodega, from open to close. When we left off, producer Michael Simon Johnson had taken us through the early morning. Now producer Camilo Vargas picks up his shift. It's mid-morning in uptown Manhattan.
It's close to 10 a.m., and while most people already had breakfast, Bernice Plummer is rushing to work from her home in the Bronx.
How much is that, Papa?
What did you just order?
Oh, I ordered the mustard cheese, my favorite old Swiss. I'm not really a yellow American thing. And turkey breast, boar's head turkey breast.
How much was everything?
$3.50. That's not bad for a roll.
Bernice wanted to cook at home, but she's in a hurry and had to improvise.
It's the spur of the moment right quick, so you have to do what you do. We only in New York, right? That's how you do it. Have a nice day.
You too. I was also getting kind of hungry myself, so I ordered breakfast. Working the grill is Juan Carlos Isiano, even though some people know him as
Pedro Hilario.
But some customers and friends here called him Gotti. It sounds confusing, but it's pretty common for Dominicans to have multiple nicknames. So we'll go with Gotti. I ask him what's the all-time bestseller on the menu.
Bacon, egg, and cheese.
That's bacon, egg, and cheese in Bodega Spanglish. Gotti seems shy at first, but when we switch to Spanish, he's more than happy to invite me behind the counter as a guest on his cooking talk show.
Bueno, aquí estamos rompiendo los huevos para hacerlo con queso. Lo vamos a batir ahora.
He cracks the eggs and tells me about his life.
Trabajo en bodega, bodeguero.
Gary is a real bodeguero. He does a little bit of everything. He usually has an 8-hour shift in the afternoon, but today's an exception. He takes in deliveries, stocks boxes, keeps track of food orders, and of course, he works the deli. He's 33 now. He came to the U.S. 8 years ago. He came out of curiosity because everyone in the DR talks about how great New York is. Gotti explains he came to the U.S. legally. This is true for a majority of Dominican immigrants. His mom was an American citizen, so she was able to get him his green card through a family reunification request. He lives close by in Washington Heights, a neighborhood that's home to many of the nearly 600,000 Dominicans in New York City, the biggest Dominican population outside the country's capital, Santo Domingo. We go on talking as he slices the mozzarella cheese.
Bueno, la aplicada a mi trabajo fue llegué a través de mi amigo.
He didn't speak a word of English when he got here, so a friend brought him to this bodega where he'd work with other Dominicans. He got the job because, during his job interview, the owner Ramon realized he knew Gotti's relatives back in the DR.
Me dice, ah, pero tú y yo somos vecinos.
I wondered if Gotti's story is common for other Dominican immigrants in the city. So I contacted English professor Silvio Torres Sayant at Syracuse University. He studies literatures of the Caribbean diaspora, race and ethnicity in American literature.
You know, basically juicy stuff like that. And of course, the reason why you're calling me is not because of, I do any of that, but because I was the founding director of the CUNY Dominican Studies Institute.
He's right. Torres says the Great Dominican Migration began after the assassination of U.S.-backed dictator Rafael Trujillo in 1961. There was huge political unrest and even a civil war that ended when the U.S. invaded the DR in 1965 and helped install Joaquin Balaguer.
And that's when the great explosion happens. People leave massively, yeah? And the United States and the Dominican government of Balaguer also facilitate the exodus because they saw the exodus as a way to sort of quell the tension.
Both governments, the U.S. and the DR, issued expedited passports and visas, which explains why most Dominicans became residents and then citizens. And it also explains why new immigrants come as legal residents. immigrants like Gotti.
By the time you get to the 80s, leaving the country in the Dominican Republic has become a way of making it in the world.
And when they came to New York, many Dominicans moved into the bodega business because it was available.
They came at a time when Puerto Ricans and some Cubans, they had begun to explore other industries, which quite often included leaving New York City.
Today, a typical bodega employs between 4 and 7 people. So for some newcomers with the right network, like Gotti, a bodega job is a great way to start off in New York. Regular customers will come in asking if Gotti's around to make their sandwich. The irony is,
no me gusta hacer los sandwiches.
He actually hates making sandwiches. But he puts up with it, because he's saving up to open his own business one day. And what kind of business?
Una bodega.
Una bodega.
Claro, porque esto es lo que sé trabajar.
Of course, he says, because that's what he knows how to do.
These are actually pretty good.
Well, I enjoy my eggs. I hear Ramon, his wife Maria del Carmen, his brother Marcos, and a Dominican delivery guy. They're gathered near the counter, around incoming boxes of yuca, yams, and avocados, talking politics, Dominican politics. Professor Torres again.
When you go to a Dominican neighborhood, the bodegas will be one of the milestones that give you a kind of a visual sense that the community is there. The bodega help to recreate visually a sense of some kind of transplanted Dominicanness.
Ramon, the bodega owner, has a word for this.
Bochinche play. Yeah, so they say bochinche play.
Bochinche place.
Bochinche
is
el...
Bochinche. You know, blah, 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 talk.
A place to hang out and gossip a little about what's going on at home, which is both the DR and New York. That's what happens daily around mid-morning at the Red Apple Deli. So in a way, the story of Dominican immigration to New York is the story of this bodega, right, Marlon?
Yes, it really is.
This is Marlon Bishop again, and you heard him at the top of the show.
And I spent the early afternoon shift at the Red Apple Deli hanging out with the owner, the great Ramon Murphy.
The man without whom we would have no bodega to loiter in for 18 hours today.
And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Ramon's story. Ramon was born in the Cibao, the agricultural heartland of the Dominican Republic.
It's kind of the little town.
And most of his early life was dominated by something delicious.
Cheese.
Ramon's family had a cheese farm, and he started traveling around and selling his family's cheese at the age of 13. He'd wake up at dawn, load up a pickup truck with cheese, and head to town, going store to store. On a big day, he might sell 1,000 pounds of it.
Yeah, when you sell 1,000 pounds of cheese, there's a lot of cheese, you know.
That's a half ton of cheese.
Yes, half a ton of cheese, yeah. Yeah, we do that.
So when he turns 19, being an enterprising young man, Ramon decided to try his luck in New York. He gets a job going around to all the bodegas selling beer for a distributor. And he's good at it. Really good.
I sell like $5,000-$6,000 in beer every week.
Ramon is so good at selling beer that after only a year and a half,
I get an opportunity to buy a store.
He buys his first bodega.
In that time, you can get a good bodega for $100,000.
First of many bodegas. He's bought and sold 6 or 7 of them since arriving in New York. And here's something we haven't told you about Ramon yet. He's also the president of the Bodega Association of America. It's a trade organization for bodega owners. Incidentally, the Bodega Association of America only operates in the state of New York. Ramon came to this country with nothing and has found success after success. He says it's all thanks to his business philosophy, a set of common sense rules that he lives by. Follow these and you too can build a bodega empire. Here's the most important rule of all. Rule number one.
It's easy. You buy and sell. And don't spend the money.
Don't spend the money.
That's it.
In other words, whenever you sell anything, put your profit in the bank. You're going to need it later.
Don't pay for something you don't need. You don't need it to buy 5 pairs of shoes. You need 2.
Easy enough, right? Okay, on to rule number 2.
Find out what your customer like and have it.
Make sure you have the things that people want to buy. In order to experience rule number two myself, I get into Ramon's van for a little day trip.
So where are we going?
We're going to Jetro.
We're on our way to a bodega supply warehouse in the Bronx, a magical land where bodega owners can get anything they want. Ronald, Ramon's 11-year-old son, came with us.
So do you go with your dad on these trips to the warehouses a lot?
Yeah. It's fun. You learn a lot. Every time I go, I learn something.
Well, like what? About the business?
Yeah, what kind of merchandise people actually buy and what they don't buy.
Ramon and Ronald started grabbing cases of detergent and ramen noodles and stacking them on this industrial-sized shopping cart. I noticed that Ramon didn't have a shopping list.
So do you know exactly what you need, or are you just kind of going off...
Almost I know. You know, too. You see?
Yeah.
About an hour later, we racked up the biggest grocery bill I've ever seen.
So how much did that all add up to?
$1,600.
And that's just the little things to get him through the weekend. He says he spends about $12,000 a week on merchandise, sells about $15,000. A lot of these goods come in deliveries. But what I never realized is how much the bodega owner has to do himself, literally hauling stuff from the warehouse to the store. Which brings us to rule number three, never stop working. Ramon wakes up at 5 every morning to open the bodega, 7 days a week. He rarely gets a Sunday off to rest.
To be a bodeguero, you have to be willing to work hard.
Yeah.
There's no way around it.
That's the deal. If you're working hard, you're a bodeguero. If you're just real lazy, you're not going to do no business.
Ronald, for one, doesn't mind the heavy lifting.
No, because I got used to it. This is like nothing for me.
On the way back, we make a stop at the offices of State Senator Adriano Espaillat, just to say hi. This is rule number four, have friends.
See.
The reason why it's good to have friends like Senator Espaillat is that it's Ramon's job as president of the Bodega Association to lobby on the behalf of bodega owners whenever new city or state laws are proposed that would affect them, say taxes on cigarettes or rules about soda sizes that could hurt their business.
Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Espaillat was busy, but his staff invited Ramon to a Super Bowl party the following weekend. He'd be able to get a word in with the senator there, surely. Right now, for example, Ramon's big fight is a plastic bag tax that's on the table. 10 cents a bag. Environmentalists have gotten similar laws passed in other cities. Ramon's against it.
You know why? Because our community is low-income community, and you cannot tax us for everything.
Many of Ramon's customers are pinching pennies, so if you accidentally give a customer the wrong change, he says, make sure you give him the difference next time. That's rule number five. Be honest.
Be honest with a customer, and you're going to have it like every day, every single day. I don't want a customer for one day. I want they come in every single day, every single day, you know.
Dishonesty can make you money in the short term, but being respected by your customers and your community, that'll pay off in the long run. And speaking of thinking ahead, the final rule, and most important one for Ramon, is rule number six. Pass it on to the next generation.
If we can teach it to our family, value for the money, value for working, that's the great thing you can do.
This is what it's all about for Ramon, the reason he wakes up every morning and hustles day in and day out. It's for his kids. He believes that in order to show them values like honesty and thriftiness, he has to teach by example, and he takes this very seriously. He has high hopes for them. He sees them as future entrepreneurs or maybe politicians.
They're going to be successful. They're going to be good for the country. They're going to be honest. They're going to have to do the thing they have to do. But I have to start working now when they're little.
I asked Ronald what he wanted to do when he grows up. He's only 11, but he sees public service in his future.
Become president.
Yeah.
Of the association?
United States.
I, for one, am totally behind Ronald on this one. Ronald Murphy for president, 2056. you've heard it a few times already in this show. The bodega sells a little bit of everything. But one thing it's especially good at selling is stuff that's maybe not so good for you. The bodega does brisk business in cigarettes, beer, and sugar. My fellow producer Camilo Vargas was stationed at the counter during delivery rush hour and had a face-to-face encounter with a vendor of vice.
While Ramon is out doing errands, his brother Marcos is working the counter. In walks the soda sales lady. She's got dozens of bodegas to get to in Manhattan, so she's got to keep it quick, which is why her name is kind of awesome.
Angelica Veloz.
It's Angelica Speedy? Because in Spanish it means...
Yeah. Fast. That's what it means. Veloz means fast.
You guys sell beverages and...
Soda. My main product is Coco Rico and Cola Champagne.
Coco Rico, can you repeat the names of them?
Coco Rico. It's a Puerto Rican soda, Spanish drink.
She's in a real hurry, but she takes some time to show me how she makes a sale. Give me your sales pitch.
Oh, no, that's very easy. The first thing that I go is I check the refrigerator to see if you already have my product. If you don't have the product, I can start telling you how fancy is this product, like how popular it is. But then you're not going to regret because it sells. So you're going to be calling me right away. Oh, send me more, because that's how I... That's how we work.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty awesome. And I love my job.
Today, she's trying to push a new brand, but Marco says he'd rather wait for the summer to try it. But Angelica is not giving up easy.
I don't mind snowing outside. I had to drink my rojita once in a blue, you know, and eating my ice cream.
Yeah, you're not going to live long if you drink a lot of rojita.
Marcos just said, you're not going to live long if you drink a lot of rojita, and went on about how giving up soda improved his digestion. It was kind of weird to see the lady who brings the soda and the bodega guy that sells it go on for a while about how soda kills. But you would expect that kind of talk from a public health expert, like maybe Professor Robert Fulilove at Columbia University, just a few subway stops south of the bodega.
You're talking about stuff that in... small amounts has an enormous amount of sugar, and especially for somebody who is pre-diabetic or diabetic.
Latinos and Blacks in New York City are the most likely to drink one or more 12-ounce sodas a day, which is bad because diabetes rates are high for both groups, but especially high for Latinos. In New York, 15% of Latinos report having diabetes. That's almost twice the rate of whites. Both groups also have higher rates of obesity and...
The major cause in the increase in the weight of the average American probably is attributable to increased consumption of soda.
Angelica distributes throughout Western Manhattan, where the Red Apple Deli is located. But the health problem hits other parts of the city especially hard. In low-income areas like the South Bronx, East Harlem, or Northern Brooklyn, places where bodegas are a main source of food. Where residents don't have alternatives... Diabetes, obesity, and heart disease are high, and bodegas may be fueling the problem.
You're really describing a situation that has people in public health in particular quite panicked.
Angelica Veloz admits, half-jokingly, that she basically sells...
Diabetes. Yo vendo diabetes. No.
The fridge is still full, no new soda orders. So Angelica Veloz races on.
Well, guys, I had to go because I had to keep moving.
All right, Angelica. Nice to meet you.
Coming up on Latino USA, during the afternoon, our team does a taste test of one of the bodega's least healthy foods. Can you guess which one it is? Stay with us. No se vayan.
Que me puede curar.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Inada, maker of the DreamWave massage chair, Japanese-crafted with shiatsu point detection and 16 pre-programmed massages, including morning, night, and full-body sessions. Learn more at dreamwavechair.com. And Emily and Antoine Van Ochtmail, supporting New Futures, which works to help low-income D.C. area youth graduate from community college or certificate programs and become financially self-sufficient. Information is available at newfuturesdc.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a day in the life of a New York institution, the bodega. When we left off, producer Camilo Vargas was walking us through the health risks of the typical high-sugar foods that bodegas sell. Now, producer Marlon Bishop digs in even further.
Bodegas have many merits, but healthiness usually isn't one of them.
Earlier in the show, I talked about neighborhoods in New York where healthy and affordable food is hard to come by. So bodegas end up playing a huge role in providing food to these neighborhoods.
Now, you've probably heard of the food pyramid. You know, it's this diagram that's designed to tell you how to keep a healthy, balanced diet. It lets you know how many vegetables or how much dairy you should be eating. Well, Dallas introduced us to a different kind of food pyramid.
Ah, the bodega food pyramid.
Dallas Penn. Dallas is a blogger. He's also part of a filmmaking collective called The Internet's Celebrities. They make a very funny show called Food Warriors. I interviewed him with fellow producer Michael Simon Johnson.
Yeah, the bodega food pyramid he told us about is like the one you learned about in school, except this one is entirely composed of bodega food.
Let's start at the top of the pyramid, the quarter water. You're talking about 8 ounces of high fructose corn syrup, sodium benzoate, water, of course, food dye. You know, but that in shape like a grenade because it's just going to blow up inside of you.
Just to be clear, it's meant to be shaped like a barrel, but it does kind of look like a grenade, so fair enough.
Potato chips used to be a quarter also. And I'm just thinking about all the grade school kids who, you know, with a limited amount of money would basically get their lunch out of a bodega. 2 bags of chips, 2 quarter waters. And that kid would be rocking until around, you know, noon.
Next on the pyramid, the snack cakes.
Little Debbie's, Lady Linda, you know what? And then on the higher end, Hostess, Drake's. Drake's and Hostess, those are on the high end. Those are like when you're balling, okay? Like you're feeling rich. You just got your allowance. So now you can buy a Drake's Ring Ding or Devil Dog. But no, I'm talking about—
What's low end?
What's low end? Low end is just something with horrible writing on it for 25 cents.
So while we were stationed for a day at the Red Apple Deli, me, Marlon, and our fellow producer, Antonia Sarajito, actually did a taste test of the low-end bodega snacks.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sweets.
5 sweets.
Ronald, the son of the owner, made sure we were prepared.
There's a bag right next to you. It's a vomit bag.
Right.
Original iced honey bun, it's 2 for $1. Lady Linda, original mini crunch donuts, 75 cents. Drake's Cherry Fruit Pies, $1.29. Original Artificially Flavored Vanilla Cupcake by Lady Linda, 75 cents. And 1 cheese Danish made by Clover Hill Bakery.
As we tasted the food, there were surprises.
Oh, no, there is cheese in here.
Some poignant analysis.
It tastes like garbage at first, and then it tastes like normal junk food. And points for an arc of improvement.
And of course, tough critiques.
This is terrible. This is like medicine-flavored jelly inside of like a hard shell.
And finally, we got to the lowest of the low end.
Last one. I'm so sad it's about to be over.
This looks god-awful.
What is?
This is the Lady Linda iced honey bun. It's delicious, microwaved, so it claims.
The Lady Linda iced honey bun, price 50 cents.
All right, here we go.
Smell it. I was right. It's bad. It's bad.
It's slimy to the touch. It's slimy. Oh my God.
The iced honey bun was by far the worst.
440 calories of dense, sugary horror.
Dallas Penn.
Here's the deal with the iced honey bun. All right. They have a shelf life of infinity. So this could have been in a warehouse for several years. You know, frozen, unfrozen, refrozen. I think that's the curing. that takes place for the honey bun.
The fermentation process.
Absolutely.
So we've been poking fun, but there's actually a very serious conversation to be had about the iced honey bun.
Absolutely. We do get to make fun of it. I do make fun of it. But at the same time, realizing that for working class folks, the bodega, they sustain you. They sustain entire neighbors, entire communities, you know, with their fare.
Camilo, when you spoke with a public health expert about food deserts, you also asked about the honey bun, right?
I did. I spoke to Dr. Robert Fulilab from Columbia University, who you heard earlier.
If you could comment the nutrition value on the snack cakes, the 50-cent iced honey buns and mini donuts.
Oh, those are the worst. High levels of sugar, a lot of carbohydrates, typically prepared with a fair amount of fat. I mean, it's the triple strike, if ever there was one. So those are all products that typically a doctor is going to say, no, don't do that.
But what if you have to do that? Dallas pointed out to me that when you're talking about serious poverty, the type of poverty where it's, you know, hard to get enough to eat, you can't beat the calorie-to-dollar ratio of the honey bun for 50 cents.
Well, according to Dr. Fulilove, price is a big factor, but it's not the only thing that keeps people away from healthier foods. There's also the fact that the bodegas just aren't stocking those foods. And some say that's in part because people aren't demanding them.
So it's kind of a chicken or the egg problem?
Yes, it is. And it's a problem the city is trying to address in a whole bunch of different ways. One of them is a program the Department of Health started a few years back called Healthy Bodega Initiative. They went around and got bodega owners in poor neighborhoods to sell healthy products at lower prices. Things like low-fat milk and fruits and veggies that are easily packaged.
And there was, and this was quite encouraging, a significant increase in the number of folk who bought the products that were there.
The strategy worked because these were products that were not just healthy, but also easy to stock and quick to prepare. Things like apple slices or carrots and hummus.
So ready to eat.
Exactly. Kind of like the honey bun, but healthy. Something that matches older food habits. Dr. Fulilove says the key is to change what customers want, so they'll start asking for it.
And if they start demanding, we want this as opposed to that, and we will pay for it, bodega owners will definitely change what it is they do and how they do it. My bet is that you're going to see a change.
Which makes sense. I mean, earlier, Ramon, our bodega owner, talked about knowing what the customers want and only stocking what actually sells.
Right. So if customers demand it, it could become available. And with time, the bodega food pyramid might start looking more like the real food pyramid.
By the way, since we were just trash-talking bodega snacks pretty hard right now, I just wanted to say you can get some great food at a bodega.
Yeah, the iced honey bun was absolutely disgusting. But if you want to get a pastrami sandwich or a bacon, egg, and cheese on a roll, the bodega will definitely hook you up.
Evening falls at the Red Apple Deli. Now there's fewer kids coming in for snacks and more grown-ups stopping by for last-minute groceries, some milk or maybe an avocado, or a six-pack of beer to kick back with at home. Around 8 p.m., Ramon, the owner, heads home to spend time with his family, and the night shift guy, Jose Ramon, takes his place. Producer Antonia Cerejido spent some time with him, unmasking the man behind the register.
If you think about a bodega like a living organism, the cash register is like the heart. Everything has to pass through it. And the guy at the heart of the heart is Jose Ramon.
By the way, you want?
Jose Ramon seems to know most, if not all, of his customers. Some choose to call him Jose, others choose to call him Ramon, and at least one guy calls him
Mr. Fish.
How are you doing? How are you?
How are you?
Everything okay?
Yeah.
Beautiful, yes. Something
up? No, just tired.
This guy is not working hard.
Yeah. You know I retired.
Jose asks his customers how they're feeling. He knows details about their lives. He even gives kids free lollipops.
Hola, tío. Hola, niño. ¿Cómo está mi niño?
Bien.
¿Cómo se dice? ¿Cómo se dice?
Gracias.
The kids call him tío, which means uncle. Jose Ramon is thin, tall, and 67 years old.
Okay, es como mi primo, como mi tío. You always smiling. You treat everybody in the neighborhood good. Okay, we need more people like him in the neighborhood.
The register is on a platform that makes it so Jose Ramon's a couple inches taller than whoever comes in. But the register's also behind a counter. This means that Jose Ramon is somewhat closed in. So some customers take it upon themselves to be his eyes and ears. Like this guy, J.R. Guerrero.
Guy was selling
four things of soap, you know, and they're expensive. They're like $20, I think. So I seen the guy, he was putting it in the bag, trying to run out, and I said, hey, what are you doing? That's
JR is more than just a self-appointed security guard.
I protect his store. You know, I come and see Ramon in the night, stay with them at least for an hour.
After the post-work rush, things start to wind down at around 8:30. I ask Jose Ramon if he brings a book or something to distract him during the slow times.
Aquí, la bodega, no.
No.
Claro. He tells me he can't because he has to be attentive. Just because Jose has a good relationship with his customers doesn't mean he has a good relationship with his job.
Las horas de 5 a 1 de la mañana.
He works the night shift from 5 in the afternoon to 1 in the morning, 6 days a week. I ask him what he does on his one day off.
Voy allá al médico, porque tengo un problema vascular.
He tells me that he goes to the doctor because he has a heart problem. José Ramón came from Santo Domingo to the U.S. in 1991. Back in the DR, he raised chickens. He moved to the U.S. to be closer to his family, most of whom had already moved to New York.
Pensaba que esto era una fortuna aquí, pero bueno.
He says he thought he'd find fortune here, but hasn't.
Porque esto es una esclavitud aquí.
Sí.
Sí, tenía más libertad.
He says working at the bodega feels like slavery. At other jobs, he's had more liberty. He's not like Ramon, who owns the store and is essentially living the American dream. I asked him if there was something he dreamed of doing when he grew up, when he was younger. He wanted to be a priest. He misses the life he had in the DR. And he's not the only one. J.R. Guerrero, the self-appointed security guard, couldn't stop telling me and fellow producer Michael about how he was treated back in the DR.
Well, I got a lot of cousins out there, and when they see me, they respect me.
He tells me he thinks about moving there.
Ain't really nothing over here, just, you know, if you got a good job, that's all.
But being American has its perks.
The women out there, they be just chasing you, jumping you. You're American. Yeah, you're American, like... Hey, you think you'll marry them and bring them over here?
JR and Jose Ramon live between two nations, the U.S. and the Dominican Republic. And the strain between the two can cause pain. JR is lucky that at least it seems he's had better luck with women. I ask Jose Ramon if he lives alone.
Sí, por un tiempecito, pero me hace falta una compañera.
He's been living alone for a while, but he's in need of a companion. When he first moved to the U.S., he was married. The plan was to bring his wife to the States. But while he was away, she cheated on him. I ask if he's met anyone since. He says he's scared to meet someone new, and so he's waiting. José Ramón is 67. He's no spring chicken. But he's serious about finding a lady. I ask him if he thinks all people are capable of doing what his wife did to him. He says no. All women are different. And then I ask him what his wife's name was.
Señora Antonia.
¿En serio?
Sí.
Yo me llamo Antonia.
No, pero tú no eres de esa.
José Ramón assures me that even though we have the same name, I'm not one of those girls. That's the thing about José Ramón. Despite his own feelings, he will go out of his way to make his customers feel comfortable. He's truly the heart of the heart, not just because he manages the register, but because he keeps everyone feeling connected and keeps the store going, even during those slow hours right before closing. Esa noche.
By the end of the day, we had noticed something not super surprising about the clientele of the Red Apple Deli.
Michael took the night shift. Remember, this bodega is on 143rd Street, which is not far from the border between Harlem, a traditionally black neighborhood, and Washington Heights, a mostly Dominican one.
But the makeup is changing. A customer named Johnny Nicholson helped explain.
When I moved here, this was a black neighborhood, and we had, it wasn't Dominicans, it was Puerto Ricans. Mm-hmm. Now we have more, we have a Dominican population, we have a black population, we have a Caucasian population now, Ecuadorians, you got Koreans, and I'm talking about living here now. Before, they didn't live here. And it's more, to me, it's more impersonal.
Impersonal.
We've seen this in other parts of New York City. New residents moving into affordable neighborhoods and upending the pre-existing cultural fabric. In the last 15 years, it's happened throughout downtown Manhattan and northern Brooklyn.
Bodegas in those neighborhoods often have the somewhat vague word organic on them. and that cultural fabric that once existed deeply knit Puerto Rican or Black communities. They've essentially been gutted, all in the name of improving a neighborhood.
And now that process is underway in the area around Red Apple Deli. One customer, who calls himself JC the God, told us he's really lamenting the upscalification of the neighborhood.
And the fact of the matter is a lot of these, you know, affluent delis that give you your little bakery goods and offer you your almond milk, whatever, you know, whatever. I'm not mad at that, right? I'm not, but you can't compete with that either.
But look at the almond milk right there.
But
though.
Oh, but see, they're assimilating as well. So, and they're doing their
even Ramon's Bodega, the bodegaist of bodegas, sells almond milk.
So on that note, long live the bodega.
He really is trying to keep up. Ramon actually has serious plans to upgrade the whole Red Apple Deli supermarket. He's even got a name for it.
And a green bodega. That's what we're going to call it, green bodega.
Green bodega, he says.
And I have it here. Let me see if I have it here. The design I show you.
In the back office of the store, Ramon takes out a folder and flips to the very back.
I'm doing. You can look at it. That's going to be the future.
He's going to expand into this empty space right next door, set up a whole outdoor section with plastic covering.
This is the future.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what we want to bring in? More healthy stores.
A more healthy store, he says.
We want to have, you know, water. We want to have fruit, vegetables.
Fruit,
you know,
vegetables.
Juices. Carpet. We're going to plan into doing.
And a carpet.
I think you guys should put a dance club on the second floor.
So obviously we're talking about the G word.
Gentrification.
Just like in Lower Manhattan and Brooklyn, as affordable uptown apartments start seeing newer, younger, generally whiter residents, the bodegas here will have to modify their merchandise, even their presentation, to cater to a shifting demographic, even if it's a more impersonal demographic.
I asked this guy, Dennis Corsi, about his bodega experience.
Where are you from?
I'm from Michigan.
What do you think about the neighborhood?
I think this is a great neighborhood, and even in the last year and a half, there's been so much more things opening, and I was gone for a few months and came back. There were new bars and restaurants, so the rent is pretty affordable, and it's building up to be a really nice place.
Are you homies with people who work here?
I mean, I see them all the time, but we don't really have more of a conversation than what I'm buying.
Now, if it sounds like we're saying all this is a bad thing, we're not. We're not taking sides. We know it's complicated. Here's blogger Dallas Penn again, who we featured earlier in the show.
Here's the beautiful thing about gentrification. With all the redevelopment of New York, you're still going to need people to pick up the bottles and cans and to drive the subways and the buses and pick up the garbage. And, you know, even with all this tremendous wealth that Manhattan has, you're going to need the opposite to balance that. The bodega has to remain. We cannot, we can't remove the function of the bodega, which is again, you know, providing affordable fare to working class people in Center City. How are we going to feed people if we don't have any bodegas?
At the very end of the night at our bodega, things are far from impersonal.
I said, this is the only bodega that I could come and make my own sandwich.
There's just one customer, JR, and two employees, Jose Ramon working the cash register, and Pedro cleaning in the back.
When the boss don't want to do my sandwich, he's like, come, go ahead and make your own sandwich. This is the only bodega. God is the boss.
It really does feel like the home that Ramon says he's trying to create. The Red Apple Deli supermarket closes every night at 1 a.m. And so, without much fuss, Jose Ramon slips me a free candy bar, shuts off the lights, quietly kicks us out, and closes the bodega.
Latino USA producers Michael Simon Johnson, Antonia Cerejido, Marlon Bishop, and Camilo Vargas, doing their shifts at the bodega. And thanks to Ramon Murphy for letting our team set up and talk to him and his staff and customers at the Red Apple Deli Supermarket. Now, if you're not a New Yorker, chances are you had no idea how big a part of our daily lives a bodega can be. From the saludos behind the counter in Spanish, to now the bodega carrying organic milk. But when it comes down to it, this might say it all. What does my son miss the most since he left New York City for college in Chicago? His bacon, egg, and cheese on a roll from El Dominicano down the street. And if we found all these stories in just one bodega, think of how many stories there are in your bodegas. Long live the bodega. Bodega, 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 bodega. I got the hood saying. That's it for this week. Latino USA is produced by AC Valdez, Lita Hartman, Daisy Rosario, Marlon Bishop, Michael Simon Johnson, Camilo Vargas, and Antonia Cerejido. Our engineer is Cornelius McMoyler. Nadia Raymond is our music consultant. Our intern is Laura Calzada. Nancy Trujillo makes it all happen. Our show was founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week. And in the meantime, look for us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. And I'll see you on my Instagram, Maria_La_Hinojosa. Ahí nos vemos.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society for all. The Ford Foundation, dedicated to working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. And the Carnegie Corporation of New York, supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the strengthening of international peace and security. At carnegie.org. Funding for Latino USA's coverage of a culture of health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
See, he's cute, just like the real Nile.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Lumber Liquidators, offering hardwood, bamboo, laminate, and cork flooring, and supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping children build measurably better lives, supporting innovative research to advance the field of cybersecurity. More information available at hewlett.org. This is NPR.